going to be talking more about Nixon's secrets when we come back, and we'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Roger Stone with us, Nixon's secrets. So he resigns in 1974, Roger. Even then, when I was watching what was going on, then I was a television producer. I couldn't understand why he resigned. I didn't think they were getting that close to impeaching him, but were they?
No, I think that is precisely the problem, which was he knew what the end of this long road. The setup of the smoking guns tape, which is a setup. If you listen to in context, he and Haldeman really do think that they have bumped into a CIA operation. Here's what people don't know. George H.W. Bush and his friends financed the Watergate break-in. The money was raised by George Bush by two Texas oil men who were in the Nixon campaign, and the bills that are found in the pockets of the Watergate burglars, Bernard Barker specifically, are traced ultimately from Miami Bank to a Mexican bank where they had been laundered by Hugh Liedtke, who is a intimate of George H.W. Bush, and Robert Mosbacher, who later becomes Secretary of Commerce. So Bush, the Bush ring, as it were, finances the Watergate break-in. That's the cash that the burglars have to buy everything they need.
the way they weave, huh? Unbelievable. All right, so he quits. He calls it quits, and goes Jerry Ford. That's what they wanted?
They wanted Ford. They elbow Agnew out of the way, as we said. They leverage what they know about Ford, i.e. his role as Hoover's stooge in the Warren Commission. That would reopen the entire issue. They struggle over Nixon's paper. Nixon really doesn't believe Ford, even though he's pardoned him, has treated him right. While Ford is running for re-election, Nixon announces that he's going to China, which is an open attempt to help Ronald Reagan to kind of smack Ford around. Puts Nixon back in the headlines just when Ford is hoping everybody will forget the pardon, and he's closing on the little-known Jimmy Carter. Carter's talking like a liberal in the North, a conservative in the South. Nobody quite knows what he is. We find out he turns out to be the worst president in my lifetime. Maybe other than, I don't know, the one we have now.
Maybe.
But I don't want to get sidetracked. So it is absolutely clear that the agency and the joint chiefs and the intelligence apparatus, they infiltrate and they sabotage the Watergate break-in. I mean, look, I stand on the shoulders of a number of others who have to be mentioned here. I mean, James Haugen's Secret Agenda, very serious journalist and editor with Harper's, does yeoman service is starting to put together the weird pictures that show that the mainstream media interpretation of the Watergate narrative is a grotesque and fantastic distortion of historical truth. The proof that the agency takes him down, because once Jerry Ford is president, Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld elbow Kissinger and the detentists out of the way, and we go back to the hard line. The neocons who ultimately succeed they are successful. The CIA takes advantage of the Watergate idiocy to take Nixon down after failing to assassinate him because he was moving the country towards peace. They wanted to bomb Red China, not talk to Red China.
So do you think at this point in this government of ours, that's their motive from now on, that if they don't like the direction of a president, they try to rub him out?
Well, again, I think that the oil men and the military and the intelligence boys and Johnson all rationalized the killing of Kennedy because of his drug use. They knew. The Secret Service agents were certainly informed. I mean, Jack was jacked up, and they knew
but
it.
He didn't seem to be a bad president.
No, because I think he fundamentally wasn't a liberal, and I think he was, but he overpromised the right wing. He overpromised the defense combine and the military. He ran to the right of Nixon. That's how we beat him. And next thing you know, he's sending emissaries to Castro through back channels saying he wants to talk. And he loses his nerve in the Bay of Pigs. The agency's furious about his failure in the Bay of Pigs. They blame him. He blames them.
Sure. And that was started even before he got elected.
Well, it started by Richard Nixon. Operation 40, which Nixon honchos as vice president, starts out as an effort to assassinate Castro. in which the CIA is authorized to reach out to the mob. Why? Because when Castro took power in Cuba, he's expelled all of our assets. But the mob guys are still on the ground in the casinos, and we need intelligence. Where does Castro eat? How does he drive home? How many women is he seeing? Mm-hmm. We don't have any boots on the ground. So Nixon authorizes Robert Mayhew, a very key figure in Watergate and in this whole era, who's a former FBI man and later fixer for Howard Hughes, to reach out to Johnny Roselli, the Hood, who in turn reaches out to Sam Giancana, and the circle is complete. And Nixon hopes to bump Castro off or invade Cuba in a full-scale invasion before the 1960 election. That's his October surprise. That's why he's not too worried about blowing that debate.
Wasn't there a deal with Khrushchev and Kennedy, though, not to invade Cuba?
There is later on around the Cuban Missile Crisis, but this is prior to the election, and therefore Alan Dulles goes and briefs John Kennedy and tells him, look, we have a secret plan that you can't discuss to invade Cuba. And Nixon's been running the show. We're all ready to go.
Now, that's another bizarre thing. Alan Dulles hated Kennedy.
But he's playing politics. So he feels that he has to brief both Nixon and Kennedy, right, as Eisenhower's CIA director, that this is afoot. So Kennedy goes to the debate, knows what Nixon knows, and he says, you're not tough enough on Cuba. You're not doing it. And he knows there's a plan, but Nixon can't say
it. Yeah.
Right. So Nixon is furious about this. By the way, Nixon had a deep distrust of the Dulles brothers and the Bushes because in 1952, they had all been for getting him on the ticket. In fact, I think that the Eastern interests probably funded his original congressional campaign because the guy he was running against, Democrat Jerry Voorhees, wanted to do away with the Fed. And the bank guys in the East were furious
about
that.
They didn't want that. That's right.
They didn't want that. So they're funding Nixon's early career. He also gets funding from the mob for his early career. But in all honesty, George, so does LBJ. So does Kennedy. So does Adlai Stevenson. Yeah. So does Truman. There's no campaign finance laws. Cash is cash. And the mob guys have legitimate business fronts. And they're players. They want their gambling operations protected. I mean, if you want to dig into what really happens in Watergate, you have to read Silent Coup by Len Kolodny and Robert Gettlein. You have to read Phil Stanford's new book, White House Call Girl. I know this is odd for an author to pimp other people's books, but I stand on the shoulders of some giants in terms of research. Now, John Dean likes to dismiss all these people as revisionists or campaign or conspiracy theorists. Doug Caddy, in his book Watergate Exposed, tells us a bit about Carl Schuffler, who's basically intelligence, D.C. police, who is waiting outside the Watergate plain clothes, blocks away, waiting for the thing to go down because it's been leaked to him. And he's got deep CIA contact.
Well, let's take some calls here for you, Raj. They are lining up for you. So we'll pick it up by going to Joel in Austin, Texas, to get things started. Joel, go ahead.
How are you, sir?
Good.
Let me take it off speakerphone. I'm sorry.
All right.
I haven't heard you bring up Leon Jaworski and the law firm Fulbright and Jaworski. Why were they chosen as prosecutors? And the reason I question this is there was a assistant named Larry Mosher, who was my cousin, my uncle, my man by the name of Tristan B. Plant, that goes back to Japan and post-war in the banking system, and Billy Gibbons of ZZ Top. They're all related, and it's all a tight circle.
Yes.
I'm related, which is why it's a fact, not just speculation on my part. So I want to know why you haven't brought up the Fulbright Jaworski connection and how they got set up, and I'll take your answer off there.
All right. Thank you very much. This is a very key question. First of all, it's important to understand that Nixon does a cabinet shuffle, and he makes Elliot Richardson attorney general and says that Richardson will investigate Watergate. The Congress insists on a special prosecutor, and of all people, Elliot Richardson appoints Archibald Cox. Archibald Cox has been Solicitor General for the Kennedy brothers. He's a Nixon-hating liberal. He's not some esteemed academic, a terrible choice. Nixon, who never always distrustful of the Eastern liberals, has nurtured the career of Elliot Richardson, who knifes him in the back by giving him his worst enemy.
He's not nonpartisan by any means.
So Cox is out to get Nixon. He thinks he's got a broad mandate. Nixon is thinking about firing him. They turn, once he is fired, to Leon Jaworski. Jaworski is very close to LBJ and very close to George H.W. Bush. Leon is a man who can be trusted to do the establishment's business. He's a fine lawyer. He's been a Nuremberg prosecutor. He has an excellent reputation at the bar. He's a conservative Democrat who goes to Democrats for Nixon in 72. So he's by no means is he a Nixon hater. And he, I think, does a judicious job of trying to figure out what to do and realizes the prosecution of Richard Nixon will rip the United States apart. And it's not a good idea. So he ultimately decides, that it would be difficult for charges to be brought. And in the meantime, Nixon engineers the pardon, making Jaworski's decision moot. Jaworski was a patriot. But it is also interesting, one needs to understand the townhouse operation, a secret fundraising operation the Nixons had in 70 is the precursor to the Watergate money flood. They start dealing with illegal campaign contributions, and guess who gets the biggest piece? George H.W. Bush. And who gets the second largest piece? That would be Lowell P. Weicker of Connecticut, the guy who turns on Nixon like a rat. So it is important to recognize that when Bush gets jammed up with this in his Senate race, Jaworski puts out a statement saying, we looked at George Bush, and there was no crime. And George Bush says, clean, 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 which I think is one of the douchiest quotes I've ever heard from the political trail. But so the Bush-Jaworski connection cannot be discounted.
Is there any way that it's changed today, or is it just as bad then as it was then?
Politics is politics. I would say things have become far more egregious. Look, Nixon lost 18 and a half minutes of a tape. The Obama IRS is missing hundreds of thousands of documents and now has damaged hard drives. We can't find the Obama healthcare records from the White House. They are, quote unquote, missing. We are Nixon wiretapped one building. This administration is wiretapping the entire country. Governments, I mean, you talk about warrantless surveillance. The security court never turns down the government's requests. They've turned the whole concept of probable cause on its ear. Obama is continuing the big spying policies of Bush before him.
Is somebody
continued the big spying policies of Clinton before him?
Is somebody telling him to do this?
I think that it is the two parties. Look, I'm a lifelong Republican. I was young Republican national chairman. I have great affection for the Republican Party. It was the party of Goldwater, the party of Ronald Reagan, two of my heroes, the party of Bill Buckley. But the party's lost its way. It's morphed into a big spending, big debt, big spying party. They talk a good game. The two parties try to sound different. But I came to the sad conclusion that they're really in it together.
When Eisenhower left office, he said, be wary of the industrial-military complex.
And Eisenhower is very underrated as a president because he resisted the deficit spending for a big defense buildup. We were very strong. We didn't need to be able to kill everybody 20 times. Killing everybody once was sufficient.
That was enough. Stephen's in Hawaii. Go ahead, Stephen. Thanks.
Hi there. I have a question for you. Your take on the CIA overthrow of Allende in Chile and installment of Pinochet. Was that done so Milton Friedman could institute his theories on economic policies?
No, I think that was the inadvertent result, because Pinochet immediately brings in a bunch of scholars from the University of Chicago, and before long an impoverished country that is suffering under Marxism is cooking economically, and there is some trickle down to the middle and lower classes, so there's a good economy. But no, it was the morbid anti-communism of Nixon and Kissinger. Nixon calls Richard Helms in, the CIA director, and gives him carte blanche. Do whatever you have to do to make sure Allende does not survive. And that doesn't just mean the election, as we learn.
Right.
So essentially, we underwrite the coup against Allende. He was a Marxist. He was the only elected Marxist that I can recall in history. And they clearly undermined him because of their fear of a Latin American domino theory.
Isn't it amazing that Castro has outlived them all?
Well,
it goes on forever.
Well, because now that he doesn't have Soviet subsidy and their Marxist society is an economic basket case, he's not a thorn in our side. He's not hiding terrorists. He's not promoting germ warfare or secret weapons. He's broke.
All right,
they don't even have gasoline or new tires.
No,
they barely have enough food. This is what socialism gets you.
They still drive the cars from the 60s, don't they?
You know, and Raul, look, the secret police still operate. Don't think that there's an easing of tension there. People disappear in the middle of the night. People are beaten. People are harassed.
Still.
This is not some utopia just because Che Guevara wore a cool beret.
When Castro came in and tossed out Batista, did he start killing all those supporters of Batista? What happened then?
He killed millions of people. He let some mobsters who would get him guns continue to operate their casinos. He closed others who would not give him guns and munitions. He was as corrupt as Batista. He was certainly as repressive. I would argue more repressive, just in terms of rankings, in terms of piling up dead bodies. He makes Batista look like a small teeter. And Batista was no saint.
No, he wasn't.
He was in the pocket of Meyer Lansky. There is no question about that.
Why did Castro turn to the Soviets? I thought he was trying to get help from us.
Well, that's a very interesting. I don't buy that, and I actually tell a story in my book. Castro comes to New York, and he wants to meet with Eisenhower, but Eisenhower won't see him. So Nixon is assigned to see him and assess him. And Nixon meets with Castro, and their meeting is long and kind of heated, but it's cordial. And they both pose for pictures afterwards. They both say mildly laudatory things about each other. And then Nixon writes a famous memo to Eisenhower and says, look, I looked in this guy's eyes. He's a communist, Ike. He can't be trusted. He talks a good game, but I think he's in their camp. Fast forward 40 years. Yes, Ed Cox, Nixon's son-in-law, meets with Castro after Nixon's death. And Castro receives him, and Castro is ill, but feeling, you know, still feisty. And
yeah.
He says to Ed Cox, I have one question for you. How did your father-in-law know I was a communist?
Huh.
It's in my book.
How about that? That is pretty good. Next up, Russ is in Hollywood, Florida, east of the Rockies. Russ, go ahead.
Yeah, I got one. Then the major motivation for the mob having the interest in killing Kennedy is because he double-crossed them on the Bay of Pigs. Weren't they heavily invested in getting back in the casinos? Of course.
They were all in on it.
But I think more precisely, they've made a bet. I mean, they've funded Kennedy, and now he's double-crossed them. Once the election's over, Joe Kennedy has a stroke, and Bobby's attorney general. He goes after the very men that his father made a deal to protect. So they decide throwing in with the CIA and the oil boys in Lyndon, all of whom have their individual reason for wanting to kill Kennedy. This is what my previous book, you know, kind of takes you to that point. And Nixon's Secret, my current book, it takes you the next step. I mean, look, I'm gratified because when the New York Times did their roundup of Kennedy books, they didn't mention mine, but I outsold every book that Jill Abramson did review in that roundup review, and now she's fired and I'm on your show. So it's pretty good if you ask.
Remember the hobo picture of these hobos in Madison Avenue shoes?
Yeah, there's no question. I'm not sure about the hobos being E. Howard Hunt and Sturgis,
yeah,
as I think some has alleged, but Howard Hunt is on the ground. Howard Hunt is the CIA's man inside Watergate. Howard Hunt is working out of the Mullen Company for Robert Bennett. Robert Bennett is most definitely his CIA handler. He burrows his way into Colson's operation. Liddy euchers him into the Watergate, and he is part of the sabotage team.
Roger, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, he calls himself Lionel. Let's find out what he has to say about the secrets of the world. That'll be our next Coast to Coast show. And welcome back to Coast with Roger Stone, Nixon's Secrets, his latest work. We'll take your final calls as well. Roger, as you look at the country today compared to that Nixon era, has it changed much?
Well, it's changed very dramatically. One of the articles of impeachment against Nixon was bombing Cambodia without government consent, yet we're bombing Iraq. Obama didn't go to Congress, for example. So there's just been an enormous expansion of executive power. Look, I think it's ironic that the leading contender for president on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton, has a long and tortured past with Richard Nixon. People don't realize this, but Hillary Clinton was fired from the 1974 Nixon impeachment House committee. She was then Hillary Rodham because she was leaking and lying. She was denying Nixon due process. She was fired by the Democratic staff director, Jerry Seifman. she nursed this hatred for Richard Nixon for 30 years when Nixon tried to meet with President Bill Clinton to tell him about his travels to Russia and the breakup of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. Hillary blocked that several times, even though Clinton seemed to believe it was a good idea. Ultimately, when Nixon and Clinton get together, they become very close. They both come from poor backgrounds. They both lost races for governor. They both came back from defeat. They're both famously resilient, the two comeback kids in a way.
Yeah. Clinton
so they hit it off, and Nixon ends up serving his country again, writing memos and advising Clinton on how to make peace with the Chinese and the Russians and how to have a more peaceful world. So he serves his country even in disgrace, even in his post-presidential years. And Hillary, sought to block all of this. I also talk in my book about when he's meeting Elvis. I mean, they call Elvis in for a photo op. Nixon can't believe the way he's dressed. He says, son, you're dressed a little strange. Elvis says, Mr. President, you dressed to run your show. I dressed to run mine.
That's right. That's funny. Some say Elvis was in the CIA.
No, Elvis had a fascination with he wanted a DEA badge. And, of course, when he came to see Nixon, he was high as a kite. It was very comical. Nixon really didn't quite know what to make of it. And it's very detailed in my book.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Didn't Nixon want to be in the FBI?
Nixon applied to be in the FBI early. First of all, Nixon ran for the California State Assembly prior to running for Congress, and he lost. He lost the Republican nomination. This is a little-known fact. He also applied to become an FBI agent and was turned down. He applied to a number of Eastern, fancy law firms, and he was turned down.
He wasn't a great success.
Everybody said he ran the dirtiest campaign of all time in 1950 against Helen Douglas, but he knew that his opponent, Congresswoman Helen Gahagan Douglas, was having a torrid affair with Congressman Lyndon B. Johnson. They were shacked up together in Washington. Jeez. Nixon knew it, never brought it up in the campaign.
Never used it, did he?
She attacked him for having a voting record like the communist congressman from Harlem, Vito Marcantonio, first. She threw the first punch. Eleanor Roosevelt and her ilk, forget that. Nixon's campaign tactics were no dirtier in the 50s than everybody else in the game. Unlike Lyndon Johnson, he didn't steal votes and burn them, nor did he have men killed.
How did he go after Alger Hiss? How did that happen?
Alger Hiss was Roosevelt's right hand as an advisor at Yalta when they gave away Eastern Europe. He was a communist spy. Whitaker Chambers, who was kind of a pudgy, unattractive editor at Time magazine, came forward and said he had been a communist, and he had been in a subversive ring with Hiss, and he was handing Hiss documents, or he was getting documents from Hiss, and he proved it by producing microfilm photos of the documents, and Hiss was ultimately prosecuted by the Justice Department for perjury. Fast forward, when the Soviet Union falls and we finally get our hands on KGB documents, guess what? Alger Hiss was a communist spy. He was passing documents to the Soviets. So Nixon was right. I know in certain parts of the Upper West Side of Manhattan that won't be popular, but that's the truth.
Let's take the final calls. We'll go to Josie in Virginia on the wildcard line. Josie, go ahead.
Hi. I think you're wonderful, George, for having this great man on your show. Roger, I got your book from The Killing of Kennedy, but if you have an addendum, I don't do computers or anything like that, but if I leave my phone or if I leave my address, if you could send me an addendum and I could slip in that book, I'd appreciate it.
Well, we will address that. Certain contracts I have signed don't allow me to just send the new section. But we're going to have to try to work that out. Now, Lyndon Johnson's birthday is August 27th. My birthday is August 27th. Well, I've got a present for him. An updated version of The Man Who Killed Kennedy, the case of LBJ, about the attack on the USS Liberty,
I'm my brother was one of those killed on the Liberty.
Johnson
was a young lieutenant, and he got the Silver Star and all that, but the cover-up of that is still going on. But I had a swirl of things to mention before I get cut off by George.
Wasn't there a break in
and the Goldwater offices way back when, before there was this big hoopla about Nixon, supposedly, which he wasn't. It was John Dean, the weasel, to break into the offices of the Democrats' offices. But wasn't the Goldwater offices, wasn't there some spying and breaking in on that?
I believe there was some penetration of the Goldwater offices at the time, but I do think the caller's got a wealth of questions there. George, which one do you want to
go ahead, one more.
Then I had something else. The Bay of Pigs, they left from my father's, he was running the Naval Air Station in Key West, Florida called Boca Chica, and my father, being a military man, could see that those people were totally not prepared enough to go and do an invasion against Castro at that time. And I just thought that little piece of information might be of interest. Also, Admiral Moore was the most beloved man in that Joint Chiefs. Everybody loved that guy. He was fabulous, since every inch a leader.
Was indeed. He was also an arch conservative and a firm believer who went on post military career to front a number of conservative organizations. Thank you, caller. I appreciate it.
Have we lost this political clout we once had as a nation? It just seems like everything we do right now is just confusion. Everything. I mean, this Iraqi situation, Roger, is collapsing. You know, after we
No, and you compare that to Nixon. Look, Nixon saved the state of Israel.
Yes, he did.
In the Six-Day War, over the objections of Kissinger, over the objections, the Syrians and the Egyptians launch a surprise attack on the holiest of days, Yom Kippur.
1960s.
Totally catch the Israelis with their pants down. Kissinger doesn't want to offend the Russians. He's against doing anything. Nixon says, the hell with that. He says, I want to replace all their military parts and supplies, get them guns, medical supplies, whatever they need. Kissinger comes with a proposal. Nixon says, good, double it. Now get it out the door. He finds out 3 days later that the military's dragging their feet and the supplies still haven't gone to the embattled Israelis, and he hits the roof. Now some say, oh, he said horrible things about Jews on the tapes. Yes, but I'll take actions over words.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll compare that to Barack Obama when it comes to Israel.
And does Israel know what Nixon did for them?
I think that they do. I mean, Chaim Herzog, their sixth president, says that, he cares more about actions than words. Yitzhak Rabin said he was the greatest friend of Israeli security we ever had. It was really about the Russians. He knew the Russians were backing the Arabs' play. It wasn't really about the Middle Eastern relations as much as everybody here was a proxy for someone else. And the Soviets were, you know, using a hot spot to try to cause a war. We had no choice but to back the Israelis.
How do you see our relationship with Putin right now in Russia?
I wish we could rent him to run our country. This guy's ruthless and tough, and he understands the projection of power. I think he's overstepped very badly in the Ukraine. But we have a leader that keeps talking about lines in the sand, and then he lets people cross them.
I don't know
when he'll finally take action. Look, I'm not an isolationist, but neither am I an interventionist. I don't think we should go looking for trouble around the world. But that said, there's some very, very bad people who wish us not well. And they may have germ warfare or they may have weapons, and we need to know that. Bush overstepped, but I do think it's a dangerous world, and you have to take these things on a very case-by-case basis.
Do they hate us because we get involved in too much?
I think that's part of it, but they also hate our democracy. They do hate the fact that we have freedom. And we don't. Look, it's the only religion that I can think of that says anyone who doesn't believe like we do must be killed. The Catholics don't say that. If you want to be a Protestant, I'm not saying you should be killed. If you want to be Jewish, I'm not saying you should be killed. That's what they are saying. It is problematic.
Lewis is in Yuma, Arizona now. Go ahead, Lewis.
Hello, George. Great show.
Thank you, Lewis.
Yeah, Nixon was one of the greatest presidents. As far as Watergate, there's two things that no one ever considers. Is prior, you had Truman in 1945 drop two atomic weapons on Japan when they were clearly whipped by the Russians and China, and their Navy was taken out of Midway. They dropped the second just to show that we had more than one. August 20th, 1961, JFK started dropping Agent Orange on Vietnam. I don't know how someone would feel if they started dropping Agent Orange on the Sierra Nevadas, but whoever did the taping at Watergate, I'd probably tape them too, see what these dimwits were going to do next.
Well, Nixon clearly should have destroyed the tapes and could have destroyed the tapes. As I mentioned earlier, he needed them for protection against Henry Kissinger. He knew Kissinger would try to take credit for his huge accomplishments. And by the way, he was right. Kissinger is the guy who drives the early wiretaps. Kissinger is the guy who tells Nixon, Mr. President, this man Ellsberg is a pervert. He is a maniac. He convinces Nixon that they need to suppress the Pentagon Papers. There was nothing in the Pentagon Papers detrimental to Nixon. All they showed was that Kennedy and LBJ got us deep into Vietnam, and it was a blunder. He's driven by Kissinger to wiretap his own aides. Al Haig helped select Leon Jaworski because he wants the special prosecutor not to look at those early wiretaps. Why? Because Al Haig put them in place. Nixon is wiretapping reporters. He's wiretapping his own aides. He's wiretapping the NSC staff. He's wiretapping Bill Sapphire, later goes to work at the New York Times.
On a 1 to 10, I'm going to have you rate these presidents, 10 being the highest, Eisenhower.
9.
Kennedy.
4.
Johnson.
5.
Nixon.
8.
Carter.
3.
Reagan.
10.
Clinton.
7.
H.W.
5. No domestic agenda, squanders it all on the war, doesn't really do anything with his enormous mandate.
And his son?
4. Weapons of mass destruction, the neocons in firm control, looking for trouble around the world where it doesn't exist, beginning the spying continued by Obama and the Patriot Act, begins the Patriot Act, which is the beginning of the end.
And Obama?
This guy is down there with Carter. He's a 2 or a 3.
Wow.
Well, I mean, I just can't point to any accomplishments, but when it comes to extra-constitutional, extra-legal activities, he makes Nixon look like a piker.
So we need some great leadership here.
Well, we certainly need somebody new. I'm not ready to endorse a candidate, but I just think if you look at Nixon's accomplishments, the opening of the door to China, arms control with the Soviets, ending the war, the 18-year-old vote, ending the military draft, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, federal revenue sharing, desegregation of the public schools, millions for minority enterprise, millions more for minority scholarships, millions more pumped into our urban centers to try to bring back urban America. He was a very progressive president. Now, I think he'd be outraged to see the EPA of today. In those days, you had no regulation. It was time for some. Yes, the system has run amok. And my libertarian and conservative friends say, oh, EPA. But there are bad people who will make money to despoil our environment if they aren't watched somewhat. Nixon
right.
understood the balance between the free market and some minimal regulation. He'd be aghast to see what EPA has grown into today since then.
Let's go to John in Long Beach, California. John, take it away.
Thank you. I would want to draw one comparison between Carter and Obama is that at least Carter deserved the Nobel Peace Prize that he won. Obama didn't. I wanted to mention, I'm a member of the press or have been in the past, and the protectionism they do for the Kennedys, I think the more we study the Kennedys, the less, and Bob and Robert, or John and Robert, the less enamored I become with them, and the more people think about the Nixon years. And I was just on the opposite of this when I was younger. Nixon becomes more and more, is looked at better. And what bothers me most is the protectionism that Kennedy gets from the press. And I'll give you an example, then I'll let somebody else come on. That 19-year-old girl now is like a 69-year-old woman or something, and she was on the View with Barbara Walters. She told the story about how Kennedy, was bedding her down during the mm-hmm. Bay of Pigs, during the Cuban thing.
Right.
And Barbara Walters said, well, why did you have to bring this out now? Well, why would you do something like this now, kind of running interference for Kennedy? And this is a woman who 2 years before that had written a book about how she had had an affair with Edward Brooke, the senator. But yet she's running protection for Kennedy. And the fact was Kennedy's been dead for 50 years and Edward Brooke's still alive. So that's the double standard I think the press has, just one example of it regarding Kennedy mm-hmm. and Republicans. Mm-hmm. So I'll take, and by the way, real quick, did the was the Marseille mob involved in your Kennedy assassination theory?
All right, there's a mouthful there. First of all, he's absolutely right. The Kennedys had a had this public image that didn't match the reality. It's a great line from Oliver Stone's movie where Anthony Hopkins is Nixon is looking at a portrait of Kennedy and he says, "When they see you, they see what they want to be, and when they see me, they see what they are."
Yeah, that's so true.
And it is very true. It was all Madison Avenue imagery paid for mm-hmm. by Joseph P. Kennedy,
sure.
who said, "We're going to sell my boy like soap," he said.
Well, he was right. Brilliant tacticians.
You know, Kennedy is riding in the back of convertibles in the California sunshine while Nixon is struck flying to Alaska because of a boneheaded pledge to visit all 50 states.
I mean, how often was Kennedy or Bobby in Los Angeles playing around?
Well, look, I think Bobby Kennedy is certainly wiretaps Martin Luther King. There's no question about that. And, you know, J. Edgar Hoover plays the wiretaps at cocktail parties for enjoyment
yeah.
of Dr. King and certain women that he has in his hotel room, all of whom are white.
Amazing.
Bobby Kennedy is the Kennedys are dirty players, and the media has always consistently covered for them.
But Hoover was the dirtiest. Wasn't it?
There's no question. Hoover is. I don't think he is. I think he knows that the Kennedy assassination is going to go down. He doesn't help until after it's over, and then he leads the cover up for Lyndon Johnson.
When do we publicly? 30 seconds left here, Raj. When do we publicly get the truth about the Kennedy assassination? Will we ever?
First of all, I don't think you know how incestuous this is. In my book, I tell you how close Nixon came to putting Arlen Specter on the U.S. Supreme Court
yeah.
within hours. The guy who orchestrated the Warren Commission would have been on the U.S. Supreme Court. I mean, I don't think we'll ever get the full story, but it's taken 50 years to get where we are today.
And maybe 50 more. Raj, once again, thank you. Keep in touch with us. Nixon Secrets, The Rise, Fall, and Untold Truth About the President, Watergate, and the Pardon. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudisor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.